Imagine loving your life after 50 and feeling energized and excited about your future. Welcome to the Women in the Middle podcast, the podcast for women who are ready to figure out what they want and create the life they deserve. Here's your host and master certified life coach, Susie Rosenstein.
Hey there, in today's episode, we're talking about when passion for brain health helps you overcome fear in midlife. Let's go. Welcome back to the podcast, Women in the Middle, with over a million downloads and counting. I'm your host, Susie Rosenstein, your midlife transition and possibility coach, and I am so glad to be here with you again. You are going to love today's episode. My guest describes several big and very real transitions in her life. The end of her long-term career, caring for her husband, discovering a new passion, and dealing with fear and diving into her new passion-fueled business anyway. There is so much here for you to learn from and think about. But just quick, I want to make sure you know about how you can stop wasting valuable time feeling stuck and do something about it. It is so frustrating when you know you're meant for more, but are just spinning and wondering when something good is going to happen, when something is going to change. That was me. I totally get it. Here's the thing. I can help you get unstuck, but you just can't sit there waiting for something amazing to happen in your life. You have to do something. This is exactly why I created the Women in the Middle Academy, to help you get unstuck and excited about your life again. When we work together in the Academy, you will learn how to create a roadmap to a meaningful, regret-free chapter. And that is because you're going to get super clear and you're going to have fun doing it. So if you are ready to change your life and learn some skills to unstick yourself with some masterful coaching, a top-notch curriculum, an infusion of creativity, and a warm, fun, and awesome community of like-minded women, then let's talk about it. I would love to be able to help you get unstuck and be happier than ever before. One thing's for sure, if you don't do something different, nothing will change. If you want to make sure that you're on the right path to the other side of stuck, take the first step and book your free, no-obligation momentum call at www.womeninthemiddleacademy.com, and we'll chat and see if the Academy is a good fit for you. Okay, here we go. Today's episode is all about when passion for brain health helps you overcome fear in midlife. My guest on today's show is Bernice Hunt. When Bernice's husband, Oliver, contracted sepsis, which went into his brain, she experienced a short glimpse of life with somebody whose brain was broken. That incident halted her 12-year post-retirement gig as a part-time wellness coach and turned her focus specifically to brain health. With the pandemic limiting Bernice's options, she plunged into the internet world. Her grandkids became her biggest cheerleaders as, approaching 70, she received her certification as a brain health professional and launched her online business, Keep Your Brain Sharp. Bernice is loving her new career direction, being an entrepreneur, challenges and all, and learning to feel the fear and do it anyway. I know you're going to get so much out of this episode, so please enjoy. Hi, Bernice. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Women in the Middle podcast.
Thank you for having me, Susie. I'm so excited and happy to be here.
It's amazing. And you're in Southern California, which is always, you know, every time I hear that somebody's from Southern California, I'm always, I love Southern California. I want to be there right now. Well, I love your story. I totally identified with your story because I also got laid off. So that's what, that's how I want to start the podcast, talking about what was going on for you in your 50s. And when this big change came, in your career and what you did about it. So let's get started. What was going on for you then?
Hey, well, in my 50s, my teaching was my dream job. I had dreamed of being a teacher since I was like 7 or 8. Idea of having fun over the summer was surround up all the neighborhood kids and put them on the front porch. And I, of course, was a teacher and I would start teaching them their multiplication facts and whatever. Then we'd go out for PE and I would teach them how to do somersaults all over the grass and all of that. I mean, I loved it and would tell anyone in a minute when I was little, I was going to be a teacher. So when I became a teacher and got my first classroom and turned that lock and that door and open that door, I thought I had died and gone to heaven. I was like so jazz. I was just raring to go, you know, spent hours and hours, you know, when, you know, all teachers do, you know, we don't get overtime, but we spend hours and hours. I would get there, you know, a couple hours before school started, I would leave when dark. I'd have my son, you know, on the carpet watching his cartoons or whatever on the floor, you know, 10 o'clock at night, the janitor's calling me and saying, Bernice, I need to go home. Can you, you know, make it toward the exit? You know, I loved it, loved it, loved it. So when we had, you know, the recession came or whatever, the first wave or whatever, and the school district started to do layoffs, I had, well, prior to that, I had stopped and taken a leave of absence to take care of my mom at the time, and she was really sick, and I stayed off and ended up retiring to take care of her. And after she died, I went back into and got rehired as a teacher and started again. And they told me at the time when that happened that I would lose all my seniority. I still kept my pay scale, but I lost all my seniority. So I started again from, in their eyes, as a first year teacher. And so that started about 3 or 4 years into that was when they started doing layoffs, trying to save money. The district was cutting costs and all this. And so in their eyes, I had only worked 3 or 4 years, although I had worked like 25 years, you know, whatever. Wow. So I got my little pink slip. I was devastated. And then I was like, oh, man. So then they said, well, you'll probably be rehired at some point within the next year or two, but we don't know when. We don't know where it would be. You'd have to accept whatever position you got, whatever. And by that time, I had been, you know, like I said, like 25, 26 years. So I decided I would just go on retire. But then the union told me that because I had a dual certification, I was a general ed teacher and a special ed teacher, and they had all these kinds of special ed openings, just go on and apply for a special ed opening right now because they had all kinds of vacancies. Oh. I was like, oh, okay. Also, because at that time I had switched to regular ed. She said, just switch back to special ed and apply because you're more than qualified. Okay. I went to do that, and they told me that I was overqualified.
Oh, no.
And so they were hiring an intern teacher in the position that I was going for because they said I was overqualified. I said, okay, let me get this straight. And I had been a mentor teacher for the district for 4 years. A mentor teacher, been working special ed. I had done about 20 years of my 25 years or whatever up in special ed. You're hiring a person that's still attending classes to become a teacher for these special ed children that I have a credential for, have been a mentor teacher for, and have worked in your district for over 20 years. Because I said, just cut to the chase. You're telling me you're not hiring because you have to pay me 3 times more. That's the deal. You're trying to save money. You don't want to pay me 3 times what you have to pay this new person. So you'd rather sacrifice these kids' education, because let's face it, she hasn't even finished her schooling. She doesn't know what she's doing. You know, so you don't, not only don't you don't care about me, you don't care about these children. And I was just so angry.
Oh, I'm feeling angry.
I had it. I was like, you know what? You know, I'm like, I've devoted the best year of my life. But even aside from that, I had gotten all these awards and accommodations and whatever. I did a summer school reading program for their district for free. Had volunteer teachers come in and work to do the 6-week program for these at-risk kindergarten and first grade children, who then when the year starts the next year, we got a special award at the school district because those kids moved up so much in those 6 weeks, they did not have to be put at risk when they started school. The teachers coming, the file doesn't match what these kids can do. It says they're like this, but they're because they had been in our program. So they did this big accommodation thing with the district, but then they laid me off and told me, would not rehire me because I was overqualified.
This is the thing. And I think part of it has to do with our age in a different way. In the way I'm thinking about is, because I also had a feeling when I got, now my situation was different because I was already feeling stuck and sensing that I needed a change. So I had a lot of mixed feelings about my situation. With yours, you really wanted to continue teaching. But I think when we grew up, we really believed that there was some kind of loyalty going on between the employer and the employee relationship, right? And I have three kids in their 20s, and I just noticed that their whole thinking around the relationship between employees and employers and from both perspectives, it's very different than the way that we grew up. Mm-hmm. We grew up fully intending, so many of us, fully intending to work at a place long-term and to be extremely happy about our seniority and to be mm-hmm. proud of it, right? And so I think when something like this happens, I'm right with you. Like I would feel, I don't deserve to be treated like this because I've given so much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, wow.
Exactly. I was ticked. But out of that, it ended up being a good thing because out of that, it changed my whole mindset.
Yes.
I was like, you know what? If I'm going to work this hard, you know, it's going to be for me and my family, you know? So it's like, I'm not getting another JOB job.
That's right.
You know, because you guys don't care. You don't care if I eat the next day or not. You don't care if my family is provided for or not. You just gave me a pat on the back. Good job. Good job. But now we're trying to, you know, we're downsizing. So hope you find some bread to eat tomorrow because you did do a good job.
Oh my God.
I was just so floored, but it was like my eyes opened, you know, to the world that we live in, you know? And I said, you know what? I am going. So then I decided, because I went ahead and retired. So I had, and I had, you know, enough years to retire. So I said, I'm retiring. That's it. But I'm going to still continue working. But this time I'm going to be working for me. Duh. You know? So I became a wellness coach. I went into some network marketing. I'm still in network marketing. But I went.
Okay, hang on. You're skipping steps. Hang on a second.
Oh, okay.
So I think this is a really interesting fork in the road because you had lots of options at this at this point, right? You could have just said, I'm not working and retired and done who knows what. But there was a moment in there, or maybe it wasn't a moment. Maybe it was a phase where you had to really start to think, well, what could I do and what do I want to do? Mm-hmm. So when you were thinking about that, what was that phase like, that experience?
Yeah. Well, I remember my husband told me, this was a few years before I actually retired. He told me, we were just having a discussion. And he said, when I retire, I want to go outside and play. And that struck me so deep. I said, you know, that's exactly what I want to do. I want to go outside and play. You know, and for me, playing was teaching what I know, sharing, you know, getting out with, you know, and just imparting to people to me is fun, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm a avid reader. So I like to read and research things and do it. I'm always read. My mom used to kick me out the house because I'd be hiding in this big overstuffed chair. No one could find me. And I was like reading a book for hours and everyone was walking around. Where's Niecy? Where's Niecy? And I wasn't saying anything. I just read my books and then they find me. She said, get outside, step us down.
So with your idea of going outside and playing, did it also mean doing something outside, or did it just mean loosening up and being free and not tied to one job?
Well, here's the thing. I didn't consciously say I would go outside, but here's the thing. When I was taking care of my mom, and so I was, you know, laid off and then I retired from that, I was shocked when I would go into a store during the day. Because I thought sincerely that there would be no one in there but me because everybody else was at work. I thought the store was going to be empty and I would be shocked time and time again as I would go into different stores at different times of day and it was full of people.
Oh my God, Bernice, I can't believe you're saying this because I had that with me. It happened on my first mat leave and I was like, what is going on? I thought nobody would be here. And to even more surprise, there was this couple that lived across the street that looked very young to me and they were always home. So this was in the late 80s, early 90s, or no, the kids were in the 90s. And I'm like, why are they home? And then I find out they were retired teachers at 55.
Wow.
And I was shocked. I'm like, wait, wait a minute. First of all, there's people shopping during the day, and there are retired people that look so young and in fact are young, and they're teachers. What is going on here? That's hilarious.
It was mind blowing. I could not believe it. And so at that point, and that's before I returned to teaching, you know, and started my seniority thing over again. But at that point, I told myself, you know what? I'm going to find out what's going on. Because I have been in a cubicle for 20 years, you know, thinking that's the way everyone did it.
Yeah.
Obviously, I was mistaken.
Wow.
So that put the little bug in me with doing my own thing, my own business, that kind of thing, because I realized that it was apparently feasible for all kinds of people. They didn't look, you know, they didn't look like they were starving. They were driving nice cars. And I'm like, okay.
That's so great.
So then when I decided I was not going to go back and work for someone, that vision came back to mind, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to figure out how to do this, you know? And fortunately for me, I had my little retirement cushion anyway. So it wasn't like I knew I wasn't going to starve, you know, and I could just go out there and play, you know, and try to make it into something that was to be of service, because I always, you know, I'm a caring person. I always like to be of service to other people. I like to impart to other people, and I like to learn and then share what I've learned. And so I knew it was going to be wrapped up some kind of way in that. So that's how I got into the wellness thing. I became a certified wellness coach, but I didn't want a 9-to-5. So it was kind of like a hobby. So I didn't want to do the appointment. And so I was just like, you know, dipping and dabbing in that and whatever, and got to net marketing, which was gave me all kinds of experiences that I didn't realize was going to give me. And doing, you know, pretty well with all of that. And then my husband's episode, his illness, temporary illness, called me to shift into brain health. And that's how I got into brain health, which is how I got into this business. But yeah.
Wow. Okay. So what happened with your husband?
Oh, okay. My husband, unbeknownst to him, had contracted an infection in his kidneys, I guess, originally. And so he had a kidney issue with his kidneys that caused the infection to go into his brain. He contracted sepsis from that.
Okay.
And got into his bloodstream and went into his brain. So that's what got me. I got, for just a short period of time, fortunately, I got a glimpse of what it was to be with someone whose brain was broken. And it threw me all into brain health, because I was trying to figure out, I mean, in my case, he, you know, I came home one Sunday from church. I came home and he was laying in the bed, and he said something to me that I thought I had misheard what he said. I said, "What did you say?" He said it again. And it was like he was talking gibberish. It wasn't, I couldn't even tell if it was English. And I said, "What?" And he said it again. And I'm like, I can't understand what are you saying? And he then started getting mad because he thought he was speaking perfect English. And so then I touched his forehead and he was on fire.
Oh my.
I was like, okay, something is here is terribly wrong. I said, "You were hot." So I went and got in some water, and then I went and got the phone. I said, "I'm calling." And he started, no. And I'm like, "No, nothing." And so I went into the other room and dialed 911 and came back to him. And he was still talking. I said, I can't understand. So then he started dabbing his fingers, his hand like this. I go, "What are you doing?" And he says, calling. I said, "You don't have a phone in your hand, Oliver." And he looked at his hand and he's like, and then he says, "I don't." I was like, paramedics came in. And when I got on the phone, they were saying they thought he was on drugs. I was like, I says, "He does not do drugs." I go, "No, But I didn't know what had been going on because I hadn't been home. I had just come home. So I didn't know what had been going on. And so they started asking him questions, just, you know, practical questions. You know, how old are you? And he was saying answers that were reasonable, but were incorrect. You would say you 63 and he was 67, you know, that kind of thing. You know, it wasn't when they asked him who was president and he had this shocked look on his face because he knew he should have known that answer and he had no clue. And he finally said, I don't know. And that's when his whole body just kind of got dejected. You know, he just gave up, you know, at that point. And they put him in and we took him to emergency. And that's when they discovered, first they didn't think anything was wrong with him because as they gave him more water and said, if I had given him water, he was talking like he makes this. And I was out there in the emergency room for over an hour. And they told me it'd be about 15 minutes and I could come in. I was there over an hour. And I finally went to the guy and said, it's been over an hour and my husband's there. I don't know what's going on. They said in 15 minutes, they'd call me. They haven't called me. What's going on? So he says, okay, we'll let you go in. They let me go in. And the doctor told me, he said, well, when he first got here, I didn't know why he was here because he was, you know, he was talking to us, having conversations and whatever, and his fever was down. They couldn't figure out anything that was wrong with him. He says, but the longer I sat and talked with him, he started saying things that didn't quite make sense.
Oh, my goodness. How scary.
And so then they did all these tests and they found out that he had infection in his brain. So that's what he said. Well, he has infection in the brain. He has sepsis. He said, we need to deal with that first. But he is showing signs of kidney failure as well. So taking him to ICU and we're going to deal with the infection first and then we'll handle the kidney thing, whatever. So he was there for like 2 weeks. So then he went into, he was in the hospital for a little while longer and then he was sent home. But God restored him. Everything turned out well. But that really piqued my interest regarding brain health.
See, this is what's so interesting about how we discover what we're passionate about. Sometimes we don't really know, but you had this opportunity. And again, you didn't have to dive into brain health. You could have just moved on to the next thing. You were already busy and having fun. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then what happened?
So he got out and you know how stress can trigger things in you, you know? Can take you over the edge kind of thing. And everything was good. He was home. He was, you know, recovering and everything was doing well. And I thought, you know, that was just, you know, an episode in our life and we're going on now. Things will be normal again. I was driving down the street one day and all of a sudden I didn't know where I was. None of the landmarks looked familiar. I couldn't have told you where I was. I was scared. You can imagine. I just kept driving, trying to figure out what was going on because nothing looked familiar.
Oh my gosh.
It only lasted about 6 or 7 seconds, but those were the longest 6 or 7 seconds of my life. And I could not deny. Then my brain then flipped back. It's like it, you know, got back in order. And then I knew where I was. Guess where I was? I was around the corner from my house.
Wow.
I couldn't have told you how to get home. I could not have told you if you give me $1 million, I could not have told you how to get home. I was around the corner from my house. That scared the gajibis out of me. I didn't know what was going on. I was so scared that I didn't tell anyone. I didn't even tell my husband. I told no one for years. Not until I got into my business, started doing classes and stuff that I even start sharing that episode in my life because it scared me so much and I did not want to hear what anyone had to say about it. You know, I didn't, but it pushed me right. I was already delving in brain health and you know, just researching some things on my own, but it took me right over the edge and saying, you know what? I need to find what's going on. I already knew, you know, there's no medical cure for dementia and all this kind of stuff, whatever. I said, I need to find what's going on. What does the research say? What strategies are available? I need to know. So that's when I decided to take a course and get certified in brain health because I was like, this is not good. I don't ever want this to happen again to me or anybody else. And if there's anything I can do to prevent, delay, restore, whatever, I want to know about it. So that's got me all, I was all in at that point.
Wow. Now at this point, are you starting to have ideas about being an entrepreneur, or are you starting to think maybe you'll be employed by somebody to do this work?
No. I was, like I said, I was already a certified wellness coach. I already had a networking business, and I already had people trying to get me, you know, to amp up my wellness thing, whatever. But I did not want to do those 9-to-5 type of clinical hours that was mandatory stuff. It sounded too much like a job to me, you know?
Right.
And so I was giving like general classes with my church and stuff. I was giving like general classes on wellness and different topics and things like that. And I love that. I really like that. But when I got into brain health and trying to help my cousin, and I was my first guinea pig. Everything I was learning, I would do on myself. And then I would try to get my husband to do it. And fortunately, most of it, he would comply with. And then as he started feeling better and better and better, he got less, you know, resistant to things I would recommend to him. And so things are doing good. And I said, you know, he was saying, you know, the thing is, people don't know, you know, they don't know what is available. They don't know what to do. They, you know, there's so much out there that you can get overwhelmed over, you know, so much controversial. It's just so much. It's easier to just say, you know, I just take my chances, you know,
yeah.
And that's not the right attitude. And so that got me really thinking. And all this happened right before the pandemic. A couple of years before the pandemic, when he had his episode in the hospital and stuff. And then I started researching and stuff. And so I started doing classes and stuff, you know, out there for people. And then the pandemic hit and it kind of shut everything down. So I couldn't like go out
right. And
do events and stuff like that. So I said, okay, I'm going to get certified as a brain, because I didn't want to approach people and just tell them, well, I don't have any certification. I just read a lot of books. Well, okay. It's like, good for you, but I don't know. You know, I wanted some type of, you know, some kind of conditioning or whatever, you know, so they'd have some type of trust in what I was saying. So I said, so I did that online and took a year and a half on all that kind of stuff and got that under my belt and decided the more and more I got into it, the more excited I got about the potential that was there that people did not realize. And the more I, you know, played with me and my husband on the guinea pig thing, because I've never had that episode happen to me again. And now it's been like 4 or 5 years, never happened again. Everything's improved in my life. My husband, you know, now he's like my, you know, model person when it comes. I mean, he sings my praises to everyone about, you know, health and all this kind of, he's talked to my wife. She did whatever, but the more I did it, the more I figured I needed to share it. And because the pandemic took me into the computer world, which I was not a part of,
yeah,
I decided, you know, I can do this online. I can make this a business online, so I won't have to do the going out, live events and traveling and all this other kind of stuff. I can stay right in my little home, you know, and learn how to do this thing and promote it online and reach thousands of people, you know?
Yes, that's the potential. And, you know, I'm looking at your notes here and I'm really relating to what you're saying, because same with coaching. I was very excited to work with midlife women from all over the world. And I knew once I had the training and the passion, I knew I could really help people. I was getting amazing experiences, and the women I was working with were able to create amazing results for themselves. Mm-hmm. And when you work online, and you're a midlife woman, you're like, wow, I love this. Ooh, there's a lot of tech. Oh my God, there's video. So I know that also was an issue for you, and it was fearful. So tell me a little bit about what that was like for you.
Yes, it was. It started actually with my network marketing, because and like I said, I learned a lot and still learning a lot with that, because, you know, with network marketing, you go through your, what do they call it? Warm, you know, warm client, whatever, the people that, you know, family, you know, acquaintances, all of that. But then you run out of that circle of people. And so I did that, you know, went through everyone I know, ran out talking to my coach and stuff. She says, well, Bernice, you're just going to get out and got to get out there and talk to more people. To which I responded, I don't do that. She says, what do you mean? I said, I don't talk to people I don't know. I mean, I'm not rude. You know, I mean, I'm cordial. Hello, how you doing? But that's about the extent of my conversation. I don't know you. You know, I said, now, once I get to know you, then it's a whole different story. I'm a nice person, but I don't go out. You know, I don't talk to people. She says, well, then you're not going to be able to go any further. And I was like, you know, so be it. You know,
nothing like fear to make decisions for you.
I know. I was wrapped in fear. Fear had been something that has had a hold of me for a long time. I remember when I was like in fifth or sixth grade and we took swimming classes for the summer. And at the end of it, and I did well, I left taking the classes. At the end of it, to get your little certificate, you know, your little swimming, whatever thing they give you, you had to jump in the deep end and swim to the shallow. When the teacher told me that, I'm like, I'm not getting a card. He's like, what do you mean? I said, I'm not doing that. He goes, no, you just have to jump in the deep end, but then you swim to the shallow part. I said, I'm not doing that. He said, well, if you don't do it, you're not going to get your certificate. I said, then I won't be getting one. Yes.
But I also realized when I was in my stuck phase from 45 to 50, I didn't appreciate how fearful I was. I thought I was confused. And so it really, now I see very clearly what it was. And once I started training to be a life coach, I started to really understand what was going on. It was all fear. And then what I was fearful of was also a bit of a surprise to me. So what did you decide to do with the video? How did you work on that?
All right. So over the summer, as I stuck to my guns about not talking to people, one day I had to look at myself and confront myself. And I've had to do this several times since. Sit my little self down and say, pee or get off the pot, you know, which means either do whatever it is that you need to do to get what you say that you want, or shut up and go do something else and quit fooling yourself and everybody else if you're not going to do what you need to do. So I said, okay, I will talk to people. So that summer I went out and I started talking to people, and it ended up being a wonderful experience for me. I learned a lot from it. So when it came to video and the internet and stuff, which I was also fearful of because I didn't like looking at myself. I don't like hearing my voice. I didn't like any of that. Meeting new people, nothing. I had to look at myself and say, okay, pee or get off the pot. You know, either do it or shut up. You're not going to have a business. You're not going to have an online business. Oh, definitely not having an online business. And just go do something else. Go in the town and give something. And I wasn't willing to do that because I realized that potentially there were people out there that wanted to hear, were looking for solutions. And I had some options that they may or may not decide to take, but at least I could give them some input, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like when we are so sucked up by our own fear, we're thinking about ourselves. And at the same time, we're supposedly, like you were saying, you're supposedly doing what you're doing because you have a passion to help people. But when we're not getting over our own shenanigans, we're not helping the people. The people are out there waiting for us. They're looking for us. And if they can't find us, it's our responsibility to do a better job at being found, right?
Yes. And I had to, you know, give myself a little talking to and say, do you care about people or not? You care more about yourself? That's bad. Exactly. I realized that fear was a selfish attitude. And I was being selfish. If I had something that might help someone and I wanted to stay comfortable at false evidence appearing real, it's my perception of what I thought would be a response or would happen. That was a very, very selfish, and I didn't like the thought of me being that selfish person. You know?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, the other thing that you said that is a weird thing about being online so much, you do have to look at yourself a lot, and that's weird. It's really weird. And I remember at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, it was so scary at the beginning, and no vaccines and hand washing and learning how to wash your hands properly and all of that. And I remember hearing that some weird statistic about how much we touch our faces. And I remember being on Zoom and watching myself touch my face more than I had any clue that I touched my face so much. None of us know, right? But when you're watching yourself, you can see what's going on. But I became very self-conscious about my teeth, about my voice. I was scared about technology and messing something up. And we have this idea that everybody's going to see. It's so hard to be found. Nobody's watching. It's really, it's so funny. And back then I had this male client. I don't have many male clients, but every once in a while I have a male client. And this was a long time ago, and Facebook Live had just come out, like to be able to do Facebook Live. And I was so nervous about it that I paid somebody to buy their course, that she had a $7 course to help walk me through the steps of Facebook Live. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to do that. And then I had this male client who also I knew as his coach that he was ready to start putting his message out. And I told him how to do it. And he didn't have that fear of perfection that I had. And I think you also had it from what I'm reading in your notes here. And so I remember catching his Facebook Live, and he didn't know what he was doing. And I could see his finger, and he was pressing things, and he was really not having a clue, and he didn't care. But in my mind, I needed to take a course, and I needed to make sure that I wasn't going to screw up. And it was a completely different experience of some kind of performance anxiety and fear of judgment and all those things. So anyway, I see in your notes again that you had a pretty intense strategy about doing a whack of videos. So what was that like?
Right. I happened to catch someone on the internet, and he was sharing that he started off into his video, you know, things by doing 100 videos in a row, one a day for 100 days. And I heard that, and that's when I said, you know what? That's a strategy. You know that you say you want this, and you know that you're scared of looking at yourself in the mirror or whatever. You need to do this. So I said, okay, I'll do it. And it was so funny because my attitude was that of being a martyr.
Oh,
I was going to just sacrifice myself for others. I don't know what it's going to do for me, but it's worth it because I care about other people. And I thought it was going to be a horrible experience where they're going to be, you know, like peeling the skin off me every day. I thought it was going to be horrible, but I was willing to make that sacrifice, you know? And so I decided to do 100 videos in a row, which I did. And I realized, and it took a while. My other attitude was done is better than perfect. I was not going to sit there and do it 4 or 5 times trying to get, I didn't have that kind of time. And then, like you said, he mentioned, you know what? Nobody's watching you anyway.
Yeah.
So I took that to heart. Okay, I can do it because it's what? Nobody's watching me anyway. And done is better than perfect. And I just have to be disciplined to do it 100 times. I did it. And I did it on health because that was the subject I love. So I would just think of something to say for 2 or 3 minutes about some kind of health topic, get her done, go on, you know? And so about the 70th or 80th time I did it, there was a switch. Something changed in me. And all of a sudden, I looked at myself and I'm like, that's it. What you see is what you get. Why sweat over it? I cannot change how I look. This is how you look. This is how you talk. You know, people have a right to, you know, like it or not like it. And if they don't it,
scroll on by.
Just go on by. You're looking for the people that relate to you. And guess what? It's not going to be everyone. And that's okay.
Yeah, that's so right. You know, and again, I think part of this is the way we grew up and that we've been around for a while. And we are concerned also about how we appear because we're older. And that tends to creep in with video. Now that Zoom has some filters that make you, you know, add lipstick and make you look a little younger and things like that. And I'm not saying that there aren't people who aren't over 50 who are self-conscious. Of course there are. But with that example I shared of that male client, he was young. He was in his late 20s. And again, my kids are in their late 20s, and there's just a bit of a different attitude. Mm-hmm. Plus he was a male and I have sons. So I don't know exactly, and maybe you don't know exactly what it is, but when I first went on video, I was afraid of not doing it perfectly and saying something stupid. And what did stupid mean? For me, it meant not polished, like not coming mm-hmm. off as a professional, not being able to hit the right buttons that I could stop it when I wanted to stop it, or, you know, repeating myself or stuttering or stammering or, you know, just sharing a story that didn't land. And also what I looked like as an older woman. And I am noticing, I think, the same thing that you're noticing. So please confirm that I'm caring less and less about that sort of thing, because I know I'm showing up authentically. I'm doing the best that I can. Some days I'm more brilliant than others. And some days the stories are better than others, but I'm doing my best. And the people that I connect with, just like what you were saying, I connect with. And that's just the way it is. I'm not for everyone. Mm-hmm. And you're not for everyone. And I am caring less about what I look like. I still care about coming off as a professional. I care very deeply about what I'm doing. But would you say that you were kind of coming to that similar kind of realization?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly right. I just, you know, they say that you can't say the wrong thing to the right person. You know, if there's someone that is truly looking for something and is interested, and it relates to what you're doing, you know, they're going to listen, and regardless of what you look like, regardless of how you sound, regardless if you stutter, you know, they're going to listen and they're going to pull out the gems that are coming out of your mouth that relate to them, you know? And like I said, and it may, if it's not for that person, then they're not going to pull that. And I also learned to not, I shouldn't say not care, but not let it bother me what others think. If I truly think that what I'm doing is servicing someone and is the way that one of the options that they can try, you might not think so, and you have a right to not think so. I shouldn't get upset just because you don't agree with me. I shouldn't get upset just because you don't think I know what I'm talking about. You know, like one person asked me, I did a post on one of my business page on cellular radiation, and I did not get a lot of favorable responses, because guess what? A lot of people don't want to put down their cell phones. They don't want to turn off their, you know, their routers, those kind of things. They are so, you know, engrossed in that lifestyle for convenience and for other things that they just can't see themselves pulling themselves away. So a lot of them did not have favorable comments. And so a couple of them asked me where I got my information from. So being the avid reader that I am, I said, oh, sure, you can. I said, these are the books that I've been reading. And I gave them about four different titles and the authors of the books that I've gotten this information from. And I said, you know, feel free to read, you know, any of these books, just to let them know that I'm not just talking off the side of my head, you know, that I have gleaned this information from reputable resources, at least what I think. And you can check them out and see if you think the same. But I didn't let it bother me, because they may read them and not come up with the same conclusions I come up with. And that's perfectly fine. But I am confident in what I'm going to tell you, you know, and I should be okay with that, regardless of what your response is. You know, I should be okay with that.
Yeah, it's something good to work on too, personally and professionally. So tell me, I understand there are five areas that everyone needs to properly address when it comes to brain health. So tell us what they are.
Okay, so I came up with an acronym, because I'm an acronym queen. From teaching, I always would have acronyms for my kids and for tests and all this kind of stuff. And so as I was learning about brain health, I came up with an acronym, and it's the word NEEDS, NEEDS, NEEDS. And I said, it's what every brain needs. And each of those letters stand for an area that you really need to intensely focus on if you really desire to have a better brain. Okay. The first one is nutrition. The second one is exercise. Next, we have engagement, de-stressing, which also includes detox, and sleep. So nutrition, exercise, engagement, de-stressing and sleep are the five areas of brain health. And I find that a lot of people do, you know, they may do one, two, three of them, but I rarely find people that are intentionally making a strong effort in all five. And that was like I was. And I talked to you about my episode in the car. And although I've always been a strong exerciser, I'm exercised all my life. So I love to exercise. I eat really well. At that time, I was vegan. Now I'm just plant-based, but I'm vegan. I was vegan that time, so I was eating what I needed to eat. I didn't have very many sleep issues. And of course, I was engaging because I was still working with kids and all that kind of thing. But the de-stressing part was severely lacking because I was a workaholic. I was that get her done type of person where I would stay up all night if I had to. And when I started working that intensely, I was not eating. I was not drinking my water. You know, I was staring at the computer, whatever it was I was doing all night long. I was not taking out time for myself. I was always putting off, you know, my vacation times or my weekends. I had 15,000 things to do during my weekend. You know, where I'm supposed to be resting. And so that does not go well with de-stressing because you never do turn it off, you know?
And you keep that low grade
stress, which keeps you in that fight or flight mode. And that promotes inflammation, disease, whatever. Okay, here's the thing you need to know. You cannot be in both those modes at the same time. You cannot be in the fight or flight and then also be in the parasympathetic, which is the rest, digest, and heal state. Just like you can't be a little pregnant. You're either pregnant or you're not pregnant. You cannot be both. Same thing with those, the sympathetic and the parasympathetic. You're either in that fight or flight mode or you're in that rest, heal, and digest mode. Guess which one you're supposed to be in the majority of the time? Yes. And from habit, we can keep ourselves in a fight or flight, even though it may be so low that we have habitually accepted it and think of it as just part of who we are. That's just how we do. My shoulders, I hunch my shoulders up when I'm stressed because we have different signs that show us that we're in that stress mode. But I'm so used to it, I don't reckon I have to catch myself and relax my shoulders.
That's such a great example. Yeah.
You're in a stress mode. You're in that defensive. Because we're like on that timeline, that deadline, or we're trying to get something just right or whatever it is. And we throw ourselves in this defensive mode that is the fight or flight, at which time our digestive system slows down, at which time our heart rate is going up. We are putting ourselves, and you do that on emergency situations, but to do it continuously.
I really see your point. That's a great example. And I know one of the things you wanted everybody to know is that it's never too early or too late to improve your brain.
Yes. Yes. The thing I want you to know is do not give up. Do not give in. I hear so many people talk about, oh, I'm just getting old. Oh, you know, you just figure, oh, it's just the luck of the draw. It happened. And then they just settle, you know? And that's the worst thing to do because your brain is placid. It can change. It's restorative. You're growing new brain cells. You can fix more than you know. Yes, we are aging and we're not going to fix the aging part. We are aging, but we can age gracefully. So people don't even recognize.
Yeah, thank you so much for emphasizing that. So I know when people want to get a hold of you, can you just share your website? Because I know people are going to want to check you out.
Yes. My website is keepyourbrainsharp.com. And so if you go on there, I have a lot of free things, free brain quiz that you can take. I have master classes that I give on free where I offer free tips on the five keys. And you can just find out about my coursework and all those things. Go to keepyourbrainsharp.com.
Oh my gosh. So good. Thank you so much, Bernice, for coming on and sharing your story. And of course, the importance of brain health, much, much appreciated. And also for being patient, I'm having some kind of an allergy attack while Bernice and I are talking. I keep putting myself on mute, but my goodness, something's happening here. My eyes are going crazy.
Oh, wow.
So thank you so much. I really appreciate everything that you just contributed. Take good care.
You are so welcome. Thank you. You too.
That's it for this episode. I loved meeting Bernice and hearing her story. She was so honest about how she was coping with all of her feelings about leaving her long-term teaching career and also her fears associated with both caring for her husband and her own fears about brain health. She's right. This is something we should all talk more about. We could get a lot of benefit from doing that. Now, as you know, this podcast is all about how to love your life again after 50. It's really all about coaching you to be more intentional and to incorporate mindfulness into your life as a regular practice. This is how you put yourself on your agenda. My focus as your midlife coach is to help you get unstuck, clear, and focused on your current values and priorities so you don't have regrets. I can help you create the success you're looking for. I would love to be able to help you get unstuck and be happier and more fulfilled than ever before. So go ahead and book your no obligation momentum call at www.womeninthemiddleacademy.com and we will chat. I'm also excited to invite you to download a copy of Top 10 Tips to Reimagine Your Life After 50. It's free and it's super useful when you're looking for some journal prompts to start thinking about who you are, what you want, and what's really possible. Head over to www.susierosenstein.com/10 questions. That's 10 questions. And finally, for show notes and links, head over to susierosenstein.com and click the podcast tab and look for episode 355. You'll also see links there for the new show, Women in the Middle Entrepreneurs. Thanks so much for listening. It's time for you to put yourself first, one thought at a time. I'm Susie Rosenstein, and I'll talk to you next week.